Are we hallucinating enough? Welcome to Right Start with Jim Custer, teaching pastor of Grace Polaris Church in Columbus, Ohio. If you see things that aren't there, that isn't good. We need to get you checked out. But what if you see things that really are there, though others can't see them? They'll probably say you're hallucinating, or worse. Faith will allow us to see all kinds of things that are there, and that will get us in trouble. As if to illustrate, Jim will show us a pair called Amram and Jochebed in Hebrews 11. They're not listed in the text, but they're there. They're Moses' parents.
In your Bibles, chapter 11 of the book of Hebrews, the writer is trying to encourage the first readers of this book of Hebrews to be men and women of faith, to look beyond the immediate circumstance to the counsel, to the prophecies, to the promises of God. Place your faith and hope in those. Set your expectation on those, because God will not fail you. We begin our study tonight in chapter 11, and look with me, please, at verse 14. Here we're talking about Abraham. It says, now those, specifically Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, now those who say such things make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they had been remembering that land they came from, they would have had opportunity to return. But they now aspire to a better land, a heavenly one. Watch. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. Now, you process that for a moment. Abraham lived roughly 2,000 years before Christ. And what the New Testament prophet is telling us in this is that Abraham, as he was sojourning as a stranger, in the land God took him to and promised would be his and his descendants. Abraham wasn't satisfied with that. He looked beyond that moment to the future. And he lived in that moment as one who was a citizen of a heavenly country. Notice what it says. God is not ashamed to be called Abraham's God, Isaac's God. See that? Because God has prepared a city for them. That means that 2,000 years before Jesus Christ went to the cross of Calvary, God already had a place prepared in heaven for Abraham. Now let me quote for you a New Testament phrase, a New Testament verse that you will readily recognize. But let me put a new emphasis on it. Let me change the emphasis to a different syllable. Listen to it. Jesus said to the upper room, guys, let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house there are what?
Many
dwelling places. Now I am going by way of the cross, crucifixion, resurrection, ascension. I'm going to prepare a place for you. But there's already prepared places and people already there. Places prepared for people. John 14, from the lips of Jesus, reminds us that God had anticipated Abraham's heart desire. That Abraham wasn't riding a wish and a star. Abraham was pursuing with all of his heart a promise that was beyond the reach of his hands and beyond the length of his life, but a promise that was intact. There are dwelling places in the Father's house. Many dwelling places. Dwelling places are for people to dwell. And Jesus Christ there in John 14 is affirming or clearly stating what the writer of Hebrews here opens up, that Abraham was not believing in vain. In other words, Abraham wasn't wishing on a star. Abraham had placed his faith in a God who already had prepared for Abraham a place in his house in heaven. That's phenomenal. And that's the whole definition of faith. Faith isn't wishing upon a star. Faith isn't hoping for something better. Faith isn't extending your own personal desires out there in the future and saying, I got a button here, God, would you sew a shirt on it for me? Faith is saying, God already has a shirt for me. God already has buttons on that shirt. I'll lift up my eyes beyond the hills. I'll lift up my eyes beyond this earth. I'll lift up my eyes to the promise that God makes to things that are eternal and real in a place called heaven. This verse says that when Abraham died, God already had a home ready for Abraham. Amazing. So Abraham lived and he died in faith. Notice with me tonight, please, how this reaching for the forward, knowing that the forward is already a fait accompli, that God has already done what these people are looking forward to. Look with me, please, at verse 19. It says that Abraham considered God to be able to even raise someone from the dead as he took his knife out of the sheath and prepared to slay Isaac, his son. Abraham believed that God would keep his promise about Isaac, and if that required resurrection, God would do the resurrection. Now notice what the rest of the verse says. From which Abraham also got Isaac back as an illustration, my text says. Your text may say something else. But the word that's translated there means that what happened to Abraham there on Mount Moriah was anticipating an event that would take place right there close to Mount Moriah 2,000 years later when God the Father would slay his unique son. And his son knew that his father would raise him from the dead. Matter of fact, the son said, no man takes my life from me. I lay it down to myself, I take it back. This authority I received of my father. Abraham, 2,000 years before that occurred, anticipated, knew, trusted God, that God would be a God capable of keeping his promise, even if it involved resurrection. And God gave Abraham an illustration of that, namely, that Abraham, when I make a promise, and then I give you a responsibility, you do what you're responsible to do, regardless what it is, even slaying your own son. You do that without doubting. Abraham, I'm the God of resurrection. I'm the God of life. When I made you a promise that's centered in your son Isaac, I will keep it. And I want you to remember that as you watch the news tonight on your TV. It's the descendants of Isaac who are being bombarded by the world concerning their coming home to Israel. There's a third thing in this passage I want you to see, verse 22. Here now we move from Isaac to Joseph. Look at verse 22. By faith, Joseph, remember Joseph? Remember, he was sold by his brothers, went down to Egypt, remember that? And then God gave Pharaoh a dream, remember that? And Pharaoh became, remember that? And through 7 years of famine, or 7 years of good, remember all that? That's the Joseph we're talking about here. Then by faith, Joseph, as he was nearing the end of his life, mentioned the Exodus. Circle that. The Exodus of the sons of Israel, and gave instructions concerning his bones. Joseph wasn't afraid to die. He was also a man who understood God's faithfulness to his promises. And so Joseph reminded his brothers and reminded his children that God had already pronounced the future on these descendants of Israel. Notice it's Israel, not Jacob. Jacob is the old name. Israel is the new name. Israel means it's the name that Jacob got when he wrestled with the angel. It means prince with God. That's what it means. And that's the name that this people carry with them. We are the sons of Israel, meaning the sons of the descendant one whom God promised this magnificent future. That's who we are. Now, Joseph in Egypt reminded them about the Exodus. The Exodus wouldn't take place for another 400 years. Joseph believed with all of his heart that what God had promised, God would do. And so he died giving instructions. Now, when you leave Egypt, take my bones with you. And that's exactly what Joshua did. You can read about there in the opening discussion of the Exodus. And for all those years wandering through the wilderness, the children of Israel carried the bones, the casket of Joseph. And when they got up into the Holy Land, into the Promised Land, they then buried it. Gave me an interesting thought today as I was pondering this. Where's Abraham buried? Where's Sarah buried? Where's Isaac buried? You know the answer to that? Where's Rachel buried? Where's Joseph buried? All of them in the land of Israel. And every one of their tombs, every one of their burial spots is contested because they are stark evidence that Jews have been there a long time ago. And they have a right to the presence there. You won't find that with the other peoples who are broadly called Palestinians. You won't find that. Their ancestors do not go back that far. They do not have that continuing legacy with the land. But Joseph, as he's dying, looked forward to the Exodus, reminding his family that the Exodus is coming, and placing them under the burden of taking his bones, his body back, because he wanted to be planted physically in the land that flows from milk and honey. Amazing. That's what faith is. Faith is saying, God's going to deliver these people. He's already promised it. I'm one of these people. I want to go with them. I can't do it while I'm alive, but you take me with you when you're dead. Which reminds me to remind you that what does your will say about your future? Would somebody reading your will detect that you really are a citizen of heaven? That you're really committed to the things that God has said he is doing now and will continue to do to their ultimate fulfillment? Or does your will just read like, me, my wife, our kids, us four, no more, that's all that matters? Tricina and I ponder that question often. We would like our will, our final statement, to reflect that we are people of faith, people who are not living for this moment, people that are not caught up in the now, who are not consumed in this world, its pleasures, its fancies, and its passions. We want our will, just like Joseph wanted his will, to be a clear statement of what we, by faith, know to be true. In other words, Joseph took God's promise seriously. Abraham took God's promise
Seriously.
That's the point. Notice the third illustration. Look at verse 23. This is an amazing one. Verse 23. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden by his parents for 3 months because they saw that the child was beautiful and they didn't fear the king's edict. Now, wait a minute. By faith, Moses did what? After he was born, was hidden. How is that a representative of Moses' faith?
It's his parents.
Yeah, it's a representative of his parents' faith, right? His parents did the acting. Well, why then does the author not say, by faith, Moses' parents did this? Why does the author say, by faith, Moses? Let me tell you why. Because that act of Moses' parents was as significant as Moses meeting God at the burning bush. I not only want my will to testify about my faith, I want my actions to be witness to my faith. Now notice, break that down a little bit. Look what it says. It says, by faith Moses, after he was born, was hidden by his parents for 3 months because they saw that the child was beautiful. On that criteria, I've got 3 beautiful children. What does it mean they saw that the child was beautiful? I think that's a clue. I think it's a signal. Come back with me, please, to the book of Exodus, and let's review what we know historically about this time of Moses' life. I'm looking at Exodus chapter 2. I don't have this part memorized yet. Remember, Moses' parents saw that he was a beautiful child. Look at the historic account, Exodus chapter 2. Now a man from the family of Levi married a Levite woman. The woman became pregnant and gave birth to a son. When she saw that he was beautiful, she hid him for 3 months. I love that. When she no longer hid him, she got a papyrus basket for him and coated it with asphalt and pitch. She placed the child in it and set it among the reeds by the bank of the Nile. Then his sister, whose name is Miriam, stood at a distance in order to see what would happen to him. Pharaoh's daughter went down to bathe the Nile while her servant girls walked among the riverbank. Seeing the basket among the reeds, she sent her slave girl to get it. When she opened it, she saw the child, a little boy, crying. Now watch. She felt sorry for him. He must have been a beautiful baby. And she said, this is one of the Hebrew boys. Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, should I go and call a woman from the Hebrews to nurse the child for you? Go, Pharaoh's daughter told her. So the girl went and called the boy's mother. Circle that, underline that. God is so perfect when he's in charge of things.
Yes.
What an incredible change of pace. Pharaoh's daughter said to her, take this child and nurse him for me. I will pay you wages. So Moses' mama is going to make some money doing what with all her heart and passion she wanted to do. And we read, so the woman took the boy and nursed him. When the child grew older, she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter and he became her son. Now hang on to that, because we'll come back to that in just a minute. Notice, it all began with the mother noticing that the boy was unusually endowed. Moms have a capacity to do that. Every mother believes that's true for every child. But here's the point. The mother also knew the time and date of the boy's birth. And the mother knew from the prophecies that had been handed down for 400 years that soon the one who would deliver the Israelites out of the land of Egypt must be about to be born. She knew that because God had told Abraham, what, let's see, 300 years before. Now look, they're going to be in bondage in Egypt for 400 years, and then I'm going to deliver them out. God had said that. So this woman was a woman who knew her scriptures. She knew the Bible. She knew what God's plan was, and she looked into the face of this little boy. Her heart was stirred, and she resolved that she would defy Pharaoh and his edict, and that she would trust God. In her heart, she believed that this little baby boy would be the one. And guess what God did? God put the little boy right back in her arms, safe and secure, and allowed her to raise the little boy all those formative years, instructing him every day, every night, every day, every night, who you are. Moses, you are chosen. Moses, you are living in prophetic times. Moses, God promised to send a deliverer. Moses, I believe you are the deliverer. Moses, you don't belong in Pharaoh's house. Moses, you're one of us. Early childhood. I can understand why the government would like to take over that whole thing, because if the government can have your child for his first 5 or 6 years, government pretty much controls what that child believes. You know that, don't you? You listen carefully. We who are parents have a critical 5 to 6 year window, maybe 7, when we're able to implant into the hearts and minds of our children the key concepts, the key truths that will lead them for the rest of their life. That's what Paul said about Timothy. From a child, Timothy, through your mother and your grandmother, you have known the Holy Scriptures, which are able to make you wise unto salvation. I never had a struggle. Never remember a struggle with the gospel of Jesus Christ. First time I heard it, I responded. Why? Because my parents had prayed and taught. My grandparents had prayed and taught, prayed and taught, prayed and taught. By the time I went to kindergarten, and I'm no Moses, but I'm telling you, there's tremendous power in those early years. By the time I went, I didn't go to kindergarten. We didn't have those things in West Virginia. When I went to grade 1, more of my friends lived in the pages of Scripture than lived on the houses on my block. I knew the names of more people in the Bible and knew their stories than I knew the kids in my class. I never doubted that the Bible was true. I never doubted that Jesus was God in the flesh. I never doubted that he died. Never. Never. Never.
G.K. Chesterton wrote, "The state didn't own men so entirely, even when it could send them to the stake, as it sometimes does now, where it can send them to the elementary school." Moses' mom understood, and God bless Miriam for being on her little toes that day. Jim calls this sermon, "Faith is Living in Illusion," and we'll get a better idea of his meaning tomorrow. You can re-listen to the whole sermon on CD for a gift of $7 or more. This, our second Hebrews series, is also available on disc. God's Ultimatum Volume 2 is the title. It's an album of 20 CDs, yours for an offering of just $69 or more. Right Start is heard on radio stations in America and New Zealand, and of course all around the world over the internet. And that's only possible because some people like you believe it's a worthy cause. Please join us if you can by praying or sending a donation. We're grateful for each one of you standing with us. Our mailing address is Right Start, P.O. Box 437, Worthington, Ohio, 43085, USA. Or call 1-800-984-2313. That's 800-984-2313. On the World Wide Web, you'll find us at rightstartradio.org. You can listen to entire sermons or the radio shows online. And you can download the sermons too, no charge. To stay right up to date, choose the podcast option, which will bring the radio shows to you. You can donate securely online, email us, and much more at rightstartradio.org. Thanks for listening. I'm Dan Pope. You and I are more like Moses than we may realize. Jim will help us learn from that great hero on tomorrow's broadcast. Please join us again for Thursday's Right Start.